The following program, Flame On, is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian, and I'm here on a very special occasion. We normally don't go into politics on this show, but this season has kind of moved me to want to cover it in a little bit more detail than we might normally do. We did, about two months ago, I think, we had a very special guest on, Carl Frisch, a frequent campaign all politics expert from both sides of the aisle over his illustrious career. He joined us then and he's joining us now. Thank you so much for being here, Carl.
You know, I wish just once I could come on the podcast and your introduction would be, you know, we don't normally talk about the Real Housewives of Atlanta here, but but instead I get to be the person who gets to be the downer and always talking about politics.
Oh, all right. Well, I promise you this.
I like Doctor Who. I like the Star Trek movies. I'm a Star Wars buff.
We're going to do it.
I'm in a mixed galaxy family. Says hello, by the way.
Oh, I thought I said hi. You're a RuPaul fan, too, and we just wrapped our RuPaul coverage. Next time RuPaul's on, I'm going to definitely make sure we have you on for that at the very least. We also have Bill Zanowitz joining us here. Bill, for those of you who have followed Flame On and our mutual show, Comic Book Bears, if you may have listened to the fan feud, I think only a couple episodes back in the feed, you know Bill from the Crime Fighter Inquiry, Comic Book Bears, a bunch of other great podcasts. Bill, thank you for being here as well.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
We are going to try. We're going to try to cover this third debate. We just watched it. We're recording it right afterwards. It's been a doozy. I may have had a few drinks. I don't know about you guys. I had like a giant beer that I go through, and I always finish the whole thing and then some. So
yeah, I am still dealing with a cold from New York Comic Con, so I am on a bit of a Robitussin high. So
well, I sipped a ginger ale because I'm as calm and cool and collected as Hillary Clinton.
You are nerves of steel. So as a aperitif for this debate, I made my friends watch the second SNL debate sketch, the one from last Saturday.
Yeah.
And it just could not have been a more perfect entree, to what came in tonight's debate, which I will say going into this debate, I think we're all probably in a similar space in thinking about this. And it's certainly, you know, since the whole thing is rigged, we know really that the answer is Hillary's going to win. But like we've been kind of along for this crazy roller coaster. We've seen the ups and downs. We've seen all the October surprises on both sides. And what did you guys think going into this? Was this really Clinton's to lose or Trump's to sort of keep it going? I mean, what did you guys think going in?
Well, I think Trump needed a home run. You know, Hillary could have done, you know, okay and still done just fine. Unfortunately for Trump, the bar has been so low for him. In order to actually outperform Hillary Clinton, it would take a miracle. So, you know, even on a good night for Donald Trump, and I don't necessarily think this was a good night for him, I don't think it's enough.
All right, Bill, what about you?
Oh, well, I would side with that. I do think that for the first 25 minutes or so before the meds wore off, I thought he was relatively reserved, and which is really sickening because these are not people we should grade on a curve. And I would agree. He had to hit a home run, and he lost. You know, he was out of contention by the fifth inning.
Well, so, you know, if Donald Trump is going to get credit for being reserved for 20 minutes, Hillary should get credit for saying, I can't fucking believe this guy for 90 minutes.
So going in, I mean, again, like, we just wanted Trump to demonstrate some semblance of political and leadership acumen. Like, having,
I didn't.
Well, no.
Thing I wanted.
But, like, the idea was, if Trump had a snowball's chance in hell to redeem himself to the undecided and sort of the undecided, I guess, the big target market here. Like, he had to come out and try to be more reserved. And like you guys said, I agree. I think for like the first maybe 30, 40 minutes, it was a slow ramp up of decent policy discussion, albeit between a really intelligent and very well-versed politician.
And a third grader reading a book report that they didn't read the book for.
Exactly. Now, I did notice this. I don't know if you guys noticed this. I didn't notice it previously, but I noticed this debate. Hillary is very keen on taking notes, which I did notice before, but also on going back and reviewing her notes. Trump's just fucking with his microphone the whole damn time. I'm like, I mean, I admit, like, I like people who can sort of talk intelligently from the hip, but I don't think that is what he can do. And you'd think by now he might at least try to have a little more of a, you know, substantive backing, so he's not just flailing up there.
Well, you know, I think Trump's biggest failing as a human being, not just as a candidate, is his complete and utter lack of empathy or humility. I think it's what translates badly about his persona as a candidate for public office, but particularly with people that he needs to win over to actually have any chance of winning this election. So when we talk about the undecided, we're really not talking about undecided people anymore at this point. We're talking about the swayable. And there's like 5 or 6 points in the middle of people that are swayable, mostly uneducated white folks. A lot of those are women, and they made up their mind mostly, and they have been trending in this direction since the last debate. Donald Trump did absolutely nothing to staunch the bleeding in that regard. He was defiant. The reason that Donald Trump doesn't take any notes during a debate is because he's already operating under the assumption, which Hillary pointed out tonight, that he is the smartest man that ever walked the face of the earth. Why take notes if you're the smartest man that ever walked the face of the earth? Why take notes if only you can sign a good trade deal? Why take notes if only you can negotiate with another country? When you can't demonstrate empathy for the suffering of other people, when you can't demonstrate humility and apologize for anything that you've ever done in your life, I think it not only turns off voters, but it leads to a horrible debate performance. The reason that Donald Trump can't prepare for a debate is because he's a rotten human being who lacks humility and empathy.
Yeah. I really wish when they started talking about Aleppo and they brought up that image of the child with the blood on his face in the ambulance, if the question had turned to him, I know he would have had no idea what was being discussed.
But he would have winged it. He does a really good job of winging the questions.
It would have been, yeah, that was horrible, horrible, horrible. And then,
yeah, by piecing it together with words that other people have said surrounding it, which is like the tell of, you know, somebody who's not studying in school and is called on in a classroom, right? He gets asked a question, and the person before him says, this horrible situation in Aleppo, it's really horrible, you know, this crisis over there that is causing a lot of strife between the relations of Russia and America. And he'll say, knowing that he's got to fill up 30 to 60 seconds, he'll say, let me just say this about that. It's a tremendous problem out there. It's a crisis. I think I knew it was a crisis before anybody else knew it was a crisis. It's a horrible humanitarian problem. I don't think anybody has said it's a humanitarian problem until I said it was a humanitarian problem. And, you know, this is right by Syria. This is a problem. Our allies, you know, it's a problem with the Russians. So he doesn't actually say anything other than what's been said in the question or what's been said in an answer by another candidate.
And here's what kills me about that, because I agree. In fact, I play a drinking game. I don't know if you guys do. It's kind of fun. Anytime he says tremendous, huge, big league, all of the Trumpisms, like, it's so consistent, so
amazing. I'm not going to pay for your rehab.
I know. Well, trust me. My liver is going to be glad when this election's over. But, like, it's just remarkable that that's what he keeps going to, and that's how he tries to, like, express his view on things without actually addressing the material, just coming at it from, like you said, his, you know, funneling through it and his sort of ego-centric view. But, like, I don't understand people I've talked to, and Carl, I'm sure you have as well, and Bill, I don't know, I think you have at least talked about it on Facebook. We have people in our circles, in our lives, who they hear Trump and they hear Hillary, or Dodge, should stick with Donald and Hillary, and it's remarkable how relatable they think Donald is, because he's speaking their language. And I'm sitting there thinking, these are intelligent people. They're college educated, in some cases college educated, in some cases not. And they should know better that this is absolute flimflam, like classic textbook snake oil salesperson. Like, that's not even like a, like, he would wear that moniker with pride because that's what he's built his career off of. And nobody has a problem with that in these little groups that I've talked to, but they hear Hillary talk and they go, oh, I can't trust her because she's a politician, because she's make deals, because she's parsing her words carefully. And it's just remarkable that that is this gut level thing that people are reacting to who support Trump.
Some, you know, some. Yeah. I try not to get up on anecdotal samples because, you know, sometimes my anecdotal samples can be skewed just based on who I'm friends with on social media.
Of course.
They're not, thankfully. But it can be. Like, if I read relatives' social media, it can be. I take solace in the science of polling, you know, unlike the Trump campaign, which loves a good poll that can be rigged by refreshing a browser. I think that campaigns today are run on the best science available. I've known Robbie Mook, Hillary's campaign manager, since he was a lowly field staffer 12 years ago. This is a guy who understands how to look at an election and splice and dice the electorate and see where things stand. We can find examples of people that defy what the polling is telling us, an educated person who likes Trump and hates Hillary. What's true above most of these things, if you look at the polling that's been done specifically about Trump's followers, it is a deep level of resentment, and typically white working class resentment against people who are newer to this country, which is not unique. I mean, that's an American value, right? Resenting whoever came after you. It was the Russian or the Irish and the Italians, and now it's people who are dark skinned. It's resentment against those people for having opportunities, ostensibly, not necessarily true, that you are being denied by a government that's trying to take your rights away. Now, this is, you know, underscored by a conservative media, you know, talk radio, Fox News, et cetera, church, whatnot. And what fits nicely into that narrative is what you will hear more than anything from his people, which is he tells it like it is. Well, what does that mean? He's not politically correct. Well, what does that mean? It means he says things that they wish they could say. It means that he can say Mexicans are rapists and that they're criminals and they're coming to get our kids, and they wish they could say that. It means he can call Rosie O'Donnell a fat pig, and they wish they could say that. So what it really means is that their hatred of Hillary Clinton is not based on any one policy. It's based mostly on her gender.
I mean, I have worried that that was the case in at least some of my anecdotal things. And like you said, the data is telling. I'm sure all of us have been following 538 to some extent. Nate Silver's
it's like we're cracking.
I loved someone the other day posted. I forgot who it was. Carl, you might remember. Like, you know, that whole like, can we not? When can we not like stop checking every 30 seconds? You know, checking 538's polls.
I think like, my favorite thing
you
about
can actually have them text you when it updates, so I don't have to load the page every 5 minutes anymore.
I think my favorite thing about that page right now is you can't even cover the words Trump and his percentage of likelihood. It just says ump.
Oh my god!
with the TR and Hillary.
But I mean, the science of polling is so summarily dismissed by some of the community that supports Trump.
You have to, though. Well, and this is not a slight against them. Mm-hmm. I've been involved in campaigns that have been doomed from near the beginning. And the only way that you can remain engaged – and I get emotional about it because it is a horrible thing to be engaged in a losing campaign, especially when it dawns on you that you're not going to win, because you have to keep a stiff upper lip so that other people don't feel doomed too.
Oh, okay.
And so, if you're in his position, if you're where the Romney people were when they were unskewing the polls 4 years ago, the only thing you can do to stave off an even worse defeat is to claim that it's not happening.
Interesting. I mean, it makes sense from a kind of a leadership level. Like, you know, if your ship's sinking, the last thing you're going to do is want to go running around telling people, hey, our ship's sinking. I mean, you know, it's – you got to keep that, like you said, stiff upper lip. But, oh, it's so –
because if his ship sinks hard, like if this is the Titanic, you know, what matters now is not if the Titanic is sinking. It's a matter of how long it's been sinking. You know, if it's just hitting the iceberg before the election, maybe Republicans are safe in the House. If it is on its way to being completely submerged by Election Day, they're screwed. That's why you can't say, yeah, we're going to lose, because it's not just about Donald Trump, right? It's about everybody else on the ballot underneath him.
Which always fascinated me with the Paul Ryan and some of the other people who've bailed and sort of done their, you know, magnanimous, or not magnanimous, but the retreat away. Like, I'm just going to back away slowly from this dude and try to salvage what I have left of my my own life. So let's get to the debate, because I did want to talk about some of the specific things. And there were some really great moments in this debate, some quotable, like, ridiculous on I wouldn't say on both sides. I'm not going to pull that fake equivalency thing. But, you know, there were certainly some great moments on both sides. So Chris Wallace moderated this from Fox News. I thought of all the moderators, I liked his approach the most, because he was not as afraid to try to rein back over the discussion into what it was supposed to be. And he did press both sides. I don't know if equally or whatever, but he definitely pressed both candidates on certain key things. And I didn't see that as much with the previous two debates.
I do think there were points that he lost control, but he did. Yeah. He definitely did rein in people, at least when they got into past the 2 minute points and into the open conversation. He seemed to be much better at facilitating the debate at those in those parts than in the introductory questions, which really seems strange, because it almost seems logic should dictate it's the other way around. But
let's just remember, this is a guy who said that he wasn't going to be fact checking during the debate. Mm-hmm. And apparently you don't need to fact check when you start the form of your question by quoting what somebody says, which seemed to really rub Donald Trump the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least he didn't complain about the fact that it was too
blood coming out of wherever.
Yes, exactly. So we went. They went through different topic areas, and the first one was Supreme Court. Kind of a nice, not that it's not divisive, but sort of a nice, sort of gentle. Let's not go straight for the jugular. Let's start it out kind of philosophical. And you know, I didn't think either of the candidates said anything that shocked me. I did agree and did kind of like that Hillary was very on message about her position, that she's not anti-Second Amendment. She's never been anti-Second Amendment. She just wants reasonable limits, kind of like what they quoted Scalia as saying, you know, on the purchase and, you know, distribution of these guns. And they actually – I'll give Trump a brief little, you know, good job. He actually cited the D.C. versus Heller. I know they had brought it previously, but like knew what it was. Like, he actually talked intelligently about it. I think he didn't just fake that.
Oh, I disagree.
You remember his,
the first reference to that case, he was like, you know, Hillary was just – she was so angry about it. She was just so angry, and we know that Heller versus D.C. case, it was a very big deal, and she was just so angry. That was like the first time he did his little, I don't know what I'm actually talking about, but I'm going to use the words others have used before me.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have that in my notes. Very, very angry.
Well, yeah, but yeah. I thought he didn't. Okay, so I may have missed. I may have not heard the mention of the D.C. part or District Columbia. Yeah. I just it fooled me. Then I will give it that, because I really thought, oh, okay, he actually knew this one little nugget of truth, which I was surprised by, certainly to say the least. Clinton, like I said, did defend it. What was the deal with Chicago's having the toughest gun laws? Is that a true thing that Trump was talking about?
Even if it is true, and this is often something that somebody who wants no tougher gun control regulations will say, you know, look at Chicago, look at Los Angeles, look at New York City. They have the toughest gun controls in the world, in the country, and they have the worst gun violence, blah, blah, blah. Lots of people get killed by guns. True that lots of people get killed by guns. True that some of these places have very tough gun controls. What they forget to mention, though, is that we don't have Mexican-built walls around all of our localities and cities and towns and states, keeping the guns that are bought and sold with very few regulations in states like, you know, Iowa and South Dakota and all over the South where there's fewer gun controls. We don't have any walls to protect from those guns being sold on the black market or brought over the state border. So it's ridiculous. You know, only if the guns being used to commit crimes in these places with tough gun control were all coming from the place where the crime is being committed, would that argument hold any water? Unfortunately for Trump, it doesn't.
Interesting. I want to go on NPR's website. If you have not checked out NPR's fact checking, not only did they have like a real time transcript, which was invaluable, but they actually did have real time annotations coming in. You had to wait a little bit, obviously. It's not instantaneous, sure. But oh my God, by now, it's probably a glorious, glorious treasure trove of stuff.
Can I make one point about the Supreme Court part?
Of course.
What I got out of that was not the Second Amendment stuff. I think that was all, you know, predictable, whatever. What I liked is that Hillary defended choice and she defended yes. LGBT equality, and that was a big wet kiss to millennial voters. Mm-hmm. I think that you know what Hillary's debate strategy has been from these three debates and the Tim Kaine debate as well has been to show a difference between the candidates that will resonate with the voters that she needs to win over, mm-hmm. and pointing out those two issues will not only help her with millennial voters because they will be reminded yet again that Trump does not support those things, but it also helps her with Republican women. And I think when they moved on from that and Trump started talking about how babies are being yanked out of women 3 days before
their baby,
ripped the babies out. I mean, he talked about women and doctors the way he talked about women that he wanted to seduce. He thinks that doctors just rip babies out of women like he just wants to go over and grab a pussy.
Sure.
It's kind of remarkable. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Bill.
No, I was just going to say, I also thought her wording, I do not think that this is something the government should be stepping into. I do think that that may also at least give an opportunity to sway some libertarian-leaning people who may be scared of Gary Johnson.
Moderate women, yeah, absolutely.
Because
I saw the same thing.
Yeah, it was a very, very well-constructed sentence in addressing the issue of governmental interference, and then moving on to examples of other countries where women were forced to have abortions or to bear children. I yes. thought that was very effective for that segment of the voting bloc that may be leaning one way, not to Trump, but to one of the independent candidates, and you know, to in some ways give them an in to say, okay, I'm for Hillary.
Yeah, it was a textbook example of her trying to appeal to that little swayable chunk of women mm-hmm. who could go either way, right? And she didn't talk about choice as something that you might in a way that you might see somebody talk about it in a Democratic primary. She no less underscored the value of being pro-choice, but she talked about it in terms that probably appeal more to the women who are still on the fence, which is about government interference. I think that's an exactly right point to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with her position on the Supreme Court was very nicely framed of the keeping government out, trying to like protect children and families and women from, you know, government and other, you know, corporate kind of influence. And like that gets the Citizen United and overturning the LGBT victories we've had in the last few years. Like all of it was very on message and really strong. And honestly, the Trump stuff, again, I just felt like it was consistent with Republican Party stuff, like nothing new. But I you know, and this is, again, the part of the debate we thought Trump was actually doing pretty well, at least not losing his calm. But the late-term abortion thing I was surprised by because I've actually never been a huge fan. Not that anyone's a fan of abortion, but you know what I mean? Late-term has always been sort of a weird thing for me. But I thought Hillary actually very eloquently discussed the problem with complete ban on those kind of later-term abortions because – often that is when things are going really wrong. It's not the convenience thing at that point.
Right, and paralyzing it with the people that she has met.
Yeah.
That was a very effective mechanism.
Your uncomfortableness around the issue is a failure of Democrats to communicate the issue, I think. Mm-hmm. Mostly because, you know, Hillary's right. It's rare that late-term abortions are rare. Right. And B, nobody's you know, the semantics of how Trump thinks abortions actually happen in this country aside, nobody's yanking babies out of or fetuses out of women. You know, most abortions in this country, a huge percentage, to borrow Trump's language, are chemically induced abortions. They're not, you know, no, there's no fetuses being sucked out of a woman or whatever. So aside from the fact that late stage abortions, late term abortions are extremely rare, they're also not 3 days before the woman is giving birth to a baby. And, you know, Hillary was right to underscore that this is one of the most difficult decisions a family can make. Think about, put yourself in the shoes of the woman and her family that are making this decision. This is a woman who is at some point in this pregnancy decided that she's going to take carry this child to term because she wants to expand or begin a family with somebody. And now she's having to choose between her own life and starting that family. Mm-hmm. And this is where conservatives are trying to step in and say, you don't have a choice here. You are not allowed to make this choice. And I think, you know, Hillary underscored that emotional response for women twice, once in talking about what it's like for the family there, but then also when talking about Donald Trump's sexism and demeaning of women, when she said, you know, I think all women have been there before. They understand what this is like.
And there were several times during the debate where she got a really good pivot in on these kind of issues that touched on his weaknesses or his, you know, vulnerable spots, at least from, I think, most reasonable voters. And what was less effective, I found, is when Trump tried to pivot, they weren't so much pivots as just hard stops. And then, oh, and Hillary Clinton, da-da-da-da-da. Even – and I don't want to jump around too much, but even in the closing statements,
right,
the fact that, Hillary's was fairly positive just about her platform, very – kind of textbook, and then Donald's is just like doesn't even miss a beat, starts immediately into the criticism of Hillary, and then just, you know, the whole way through. It was kind of remarkable just how inelegant. And listen, I host podcasts. Bill understands this, and Carl, you do a lot of podcasts as well and radio. Like, it's hard sometimes to make a really good segue. It's not an easy thing. But oh my God, when you don't even try and you just hard stop and then go, it's like,
at least joke about it.
Exactly. What did you guys think about? I noticed a couple times Trump trying. I don't think he was trying to make a joke in any like real sense, but like his interjections, I didn't track this, but he had more interjections than the second debate, less than the first, but it was that kind of like Lex Luthor yelling out wrong. You know, and just these little interjections that just kept getting in the way and were just – I don't know. They just made him seem smarmy and asshole-ish. Like, I don't know.
Compounded when he would like the direction a question was going with Chris Wallace, and he would lean forward and say, exactly, or yep. you know, I think – I don't know what – I can tell you what school of debating he went to. It was – called the school of no preparation whatsoever, but that's not a way to win over the confidences of anybody in the room.
It's like that little kid in the front row that like just has to demonstrate that he knows what he's talking about but really doesn't.
Like, it's just bullying behavior, and it underscores the entire premise of the attack on him.
Right.
Yes, I agree. So moving on, immigration, of course, this was one that hadn't come up as much, which was a lot of people were really surprised this didn't come up earlier because, of course, we all know Trump wants to build the wall, build a big, huge, huge. It's going to be the best, tremendous wall, big league, whatever. Like the fact that he tried to pivot and bring Hillary into it, saying Hillary voted to build the wall. And then
Obama's deporting people,
which that made
evidently nobody knows about. No, I've been reading about that forever. That's nothing
new. There have been more people deported under his administration than at any other point.
Which undercuts his arguments, by the way.
And he presented it as if it was so weird how he brought that into the conversation. So you're agreeing with Obama? That made no sense the way he transitioned into
but
that
statement. It's a product of the world's smartest man preparing for debates by not preparing.
Yeah.
When a serious person prepares for a debate, they consider what their response to a question is going to be. They consider what the response to their response might be and how that should impact their answer. Yeah. He doesn't do that because he's the smartest person who ever walked the face of the earth. So how could anybody question what he has to say? He will
so
never
smart.
See the error of his ways.
Roger Ailes has reportedly even completely given up on this guy. There was a piece in Vanity Fair today I read that basically talks about he's just given up. He's like, no, we're done. This isn't going to work. And this was after the second debate. Like, this isn't even a recent thing. But specifically – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
No, I was just going to say I do think during the immigration section, that was the first time we saw Hillary land some definite blows. I thought
– like what?
Her bringing up the meeting that Trump had with the Mexican president. He choked. Two
yeah,
words.
No, it was the best meeting ever.
Yeah.
It was the best meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about the – okay, I do want to circle back to the wall thing because what I found fascinating –
It was the same thing as birtherism. Oh, she did first.
Well, right. But, yeah, I mean, it's whole, like she clarified. She's like, yeah, I wanted to have border security. I actually do support border security. And, yes, part of that plan is to build some walls – but does anyone really think that that's easily conflated with the big wall that he wants to build? They're obviously completely different. It's like, why did you even try that angle? It makes no sense. It's
I can tell you that the Washington Post is now naming its winners and losers of the debate, and its winners of the debate are Hillary Clinton, Chris Wallace, Vladimir Putin, David Fahrenthold, who's a Washington Post reporter, puppets, and the losers are Donald Trump and down ballot Republicans.
Yeah.
So
I do think that exchange about the puppet was probably my favorite exchange. You know, where Clinton said that's because Putin would rather have a puppet. Trump, you're the puppet. No, you're the puppet. That could have been a line from Tommy Boy. You know.
Yeah, I agree. Trump stepped on it, and it would have been a beautiful gut punch if she'd gotten it all the way out before he stepped on it.
Yeah.
Because her full line was, he wants a puppet, not an American president. And if she'd gotten that entirely out, I think that's the clip that we'd be watching on repeat tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You still get that thing. It just won't be as crisp. I thought it was a great low, though.
So, okay, and I know the obvious answer to this. I want to try to figure out if there's any other explanation, but what the fuck is it with Trump and Putin? He only ever comes back to – he said nice things about me, which he did say in one translation of one of the things he said, something that could have been perceived as he's what, like brilliant? But what he actually said, and they clarified this after the fact, that he's cartoonish and like sort of – over the top. Like, it was a total mistranslation. Why does he keep not taking the easy, obvious, will you condemn Russia for this? Will you – he won't even go there. He won't say it. I don't – like, other than the obvious, which is there is something really messed up connecting him, which I don't want to go for. Just as – like, let's just – you know, one thing that it could be, put it aside. Why else? Why else wouldn't he just do it? It's an easy. It's a softball if there ever was one. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've always likened Trump to that really terrible community theater actor that will take any is such an attention whore that will take any attention even if it's negative. The one that would frame a bad review because the name is presented. And apparently, according to Art of the Deal, the Art of the Deal's co-author, you know, he's done that in the past. Of having these articles that were remarkably critical of him hanging up right in his office. So it seems to me that really sickening any attention is good attention area that just pollutes his way of thinking, and he's fallen into it time and time again when the Putin question comes up.
Well, and I think you're right. I think it's two parts, right? It's psychological, and I think you nail it there. I think of it this way, that he's running to be the leader of the only superpower left, the leader of the free world, and his peers would be other leaders. unfortunately for him, the only leaders of other countries that praise him are despots and dictators. So when that's the case, you kind of just trumpet what you've got. And to take it a step further on a policy level, you know, you look at what we know. We know that one of his foreign policy advisors is being investigated by the federal government for potentially trying to negotiate with Kremlin insiders, which is a violation of federal law. You're not allowed to deal. No, it's not Paul Manafort.
Oh, it's not Manafort?
It's one of his foreign policy advisors. Paul Manafort had apparently contracts with
Ukraine.
With Ukraine Soviet interests, which is not illegal necessarily. How he reported those contracts would be illegal. But there's this foreign policy guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, who one of his senior foreign policy guys who has experience working in the Russia sector in terms of like foreign policy circles and is being investigated by the federal government for apparently trying to broker deals with the Kremlin. You know, we have a history of candidates doing this to undermine their opponents. Richard Nixon – in 1968, leading up to the 1968 election, this has come out in the last several years. Richard Nixon spent a good deal of his time before getting into the race trying to undermine Johnson's ability to bring peace in Vietnam. And he did that by telling the North Vietnamese that he would give them a better deal. They should just stay put. If he becomes president, they'll get a better deal. And so they backed out of what was supposedly – a near complete deal to bring peace to Vietnam. So it's not unusual. And the other thing is that we know from the press conference that Trump denies ever happened that he encouraged the Russians to conduct espionage on on the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party, and Hillary's right to say on American citizens. And if it is the only thing that is bringing critical tension that can match his own failings as a candidate, he's not going to try and tamper that down by being too critical of the Kremlin or of Putin when they're so heavily in his corner and doing whatever it takes to try and defeat Hillary.
Interesting. That's interesting because, like, I've always heard the obvious, oh, well, he's got Russian interests. He's probably got money
also,
tied
what does
up.
He gain? What does he gain by switching on the issue and condemning Putin? Yeah. It's not like there's a segment of the electorate that is looking at him and going, you know, if he would just admit this Putin thing, I'd be for him.
Well, what's funny, though, is it's such a traditional Republican thing to be anti-Russia and strongly so and accuse the Democrats of being communist and having left ties to the socialism and all that. So it surprises me that you have a Republican candidate for the, you know, national office of presidency, and he's like almost pro-Russia. It's just bizarre. It's bizarre world this whole year.
And I thought that was a missed opportunity for Hillary because Trump always brings out Douglas MacArthur and General Patton would be spinning in their grave. That's the perfect opportunity to hold up the gilded lily of that's probably not the way of saying it, but you know the god Ronald Reagan would be spinning in his grave.
Oh my god!
Perfect opportunity and. She never took that. And no one's ever taken that. And that surprises me.
Well, if we've learned anything over the last 8 years, there are two primary motivating factors, or at least the last 8 years. There's been one primary motivating factor that can cause a conservative Tea Partying alt-right conservative to do an about-face on the morals and convictions of the Republican Party and stick a finger in the eye of the president. And that's – you know, the one determining factor that allows them to do that is melanin, you know, the pigmentation of his skin.
The nationalism movement, yeah.
Right, and that will be substituted by ovaries in the new White House. They will be able to say that, you know, and Trump is not the only one who has said that Putin is a great leader. You have all kinds of Putin fetishization going on in conservative circles, especially on talk radio. And with Trump's campaign being driven by the far, far fringe right media outlets like Breitbart and conservative talk radio and Sean Hannity, it's no wonder that those things are being echoed by his campaign.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if Milo had some, you know, authoritarian art exhibit coming up, you know, in cities. And I have actually friends that I I really like, and I think they're really smart people, and they really, really dig Milo and some of the Breitbart kind of stuff, and I just sit there and...
But you know why they do, don't you?
Well, I know why one of them does, because he's like, oh, no, he's a gay guy, and he supports Trump. I mean, that just proves that not all gays have to be Democrats, yeah. And so you should listen to him. You should check out what he's saying. And I only had to listen to about 5 seconds, and I realized this guy's an asshole. I don't care what he does with his penis or his ass. This man is nothing I want to have anything to do with.
Oh, but he's somebody who should be liberal, but he's not. So we're going to put him on a pedestal, just like we do people like Herman Cain, just like we do people like Carly Fiorina. Mm-hmm. You know, they put Sarah Palin on the ticket with John McCain because they thought she might be able to get some of that Hillary disaffected people from voting for Obama. But they forgot one thing. Women aren't voting just because somebody's got breasts and ovaries. Women are voting on a plethora of issues that they care passionately about. And a woman is not going to be a vessel for the female vote if she doesn't have a good record on those issues. You know, but it nonetheless makes Republicans who despise these people, you know, whether it's African-Americans or gay people or women, generally speaking, it makes them feel better about themselves to have one of their own to hold up as a trophy.
Yeah.
Palin's now, absence from the campaign has been very interesting to me.
She was at the debate.
The non-invite to the Republican convention and what I'm assuming is fairly limited campaign appearances for Trump.
But Trump explained that.
Because Alaska's far.
So far. I mean, yeah. She's also monitoring Russia, so. Not to mention all the legal problems that her family's been going through with her son and her daughter, the poster child of abstinence only education, is having another child out of wedlock. So,
but it just seems strategically that she would be ideal to pit against Clinton in the heads of Republicans. Yeah,
even the playing field thing. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, let's move
I'm
on.
I'm just surprised at that.
Let's move on to the economy.
There's more there.
They wanted to, you know, cover a bunch of different issues in this debate. And they actually, to their credit, Chris Wallace, I think, deserves some credit, got through all of them that they had talked about. The economy was interesting because there was some mentions, especially from, I believe, was this the one where I know Trump at least at one point cited Bernie and Podesta and kind of an email pivot that just was so like petty and stupid, they said some very bad things about you. They said some really
very,
and I agree
bad.
With Bernie Sanders. I mean, it was almost like one of those quotes where you're just like, did he just say that?
The section on the economy was the worst example of Trump word salad.
No.
Yeah, just leading off, tying back to Japan and South Korea and all of NATO paying up.
By the way, there are videos of him saying he wants to give these people nukes. So just for the record.
Yeah. No, it's like this isn't even hard to fact check. Like you said, it's been fact checked. It's been shared all over the place. We know what he said. I don't understand why he just – and again, maybe this comes back to what you were saying earlier, Carl. But he denies saying these things that are blatantly provably false and have been proven false. And I don't even know why – you would go there. Why even waste your energy in that way when it doesn't – it's just wrong. It's not true. I understand where it's like finer points. You know, Hillary will say something that's mostly true and there's a little bit in there that's questionable, but it's still mostly true and isn't obviously, you know, debunkable. But Trump just flat out does it, like blusters his way through the whole time. He's like, did you forget what you said? Do you believe that you just – I've never been able to understand why any politician can be so brazen, especially Donald Trump, about that. But he's setting his own reality. I mean, I guess
– because nobody's going to say, actually, sir, let's lower the screen. We have some video to show you. I wish they would, but they don't.
Oh my God. Can you imagine in 4 years like what they will hopefully try to do with technology and the debates and actually – find a way to do that, because I mean it would be remarkable.
Maybe in 20 years. I mean, they're still doing online polls for questions and think that's breaking technology.
Yeah, that's true. Now the Japan thing was interesting because yes, he's very keen on making other countries pay their fair share and all this other stuff. And I'm sitting there like, from what I have read, that's not a problem, at least in the terms of the military protection. What we're getting out of it isn't just, you know, oh, well, you know, we're protecting the world. No, we're getting to have a military base in a forward space of operation. It's the whole reason we took Hawaii and took other, you know, Guam and other places to have forward bases of operation. So we're not, we're getting a lot out of it, you know, to have that protection there. So it's remarkable that he's demanding we renegotiate these treaties when it's like, that's, do you not understand how that benefits our national security? Like,
no, he doesn't. No,
right. He does. No, he doesn't.
I thought that through the entire economic section, that really demonstrated he does not know how government operates. Continually going after Hillary Clinton on, you know, you should have made it harder for me to do this, made it impossible for me to take those tax breaks.
Stuff about that. Yeah. What kind of argument is that? Well, you didn't – in your
you
30 years,
yeah.
you didn't – it's like –
Donald Trump assumes that all elected officials want the dictatorial powers that he's pursuing.
Mm-hmm. Dangerously so.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that was another win for Hillary with the Chinese steal. Circling back to it, especially, yeah. Especially
so
that second time.
After the mess that was the economy, we hit the real train off the rail segment of the fitness to be president.
Whoa. I can't even read my notes.
Like, flat out, so they, of course, they bring up the accusations and the hot mic video that is, you know, now famous. And, you know, his only response to these allegations is they're lies and fiction. And what
said he didn't apologize to his wife.
I thought that was – he said the exact opposite last time too. Oh, no, he didn't apologize to his wife. I think he meant he didn't apologize to his wife about the recent accusations because they're not true. They're lies and fiction. I think that's what he was saying. I might be mistaken. But now the new thing is, of course, well, I mean, you know, the media's in the tank. It's rigged for Hillary and all that. But, I mean, he's flat out saying that the Hillary campaign not only, you know, put these women up to it, but I think then he made the parallel somewhere down the way – that they're also – Obama and Hillary are paying for violent protesters in his rallies? That was new.
This is what this comes from. There's a video being pushed around by this guy James O'Keefe of this guy who worked for a group that does field work who was saying all kinds of crazy things about, you know, instigating violence and paying people X, Y, and Z. Now, I happen to know the guy – not well, but I know the guy who was caught in this video and was fired by this group making these claims. If you watch the video and you know who this person is, even if you just put yourself in the perspective of watching a guy who is trying to impress somebody with his supposed connections, he's not a senior person in any regard. He certainly wouldn't have any knowledge of what campaigns are doing. But the notion that what he says, by the way, in the video apparently is like, oh yeah, we bus thousands of people in to you know, we pay people and we get them to do – yeah, we get them to disrupt the rallies. We're very organized. We're very close to the Clinton campaign. We're very close to the DNC. We're very close. I work with very senior people. It was the braggadocio of somebody who is trying to compensate for how unimportant they are. Right. Donald Trump should know that flavor very well.
Of course. He's speaking his language. Absolutely. So that's interesting. I'm glad you knew about that because I came out of nowhere. I'm like, I hadn't read about
again,
that.
And this is James O'Keefe, by the way, who has been caught doctoring videos in the past.
Yeah.
So.
And Carl, correct me if I'm wrong because you'll absolutely be more tuned into this than I will. That was basically the same modus operandi he employed against Acorn. Was getting into these lower level people. And,
right. Well, yeah. And, you know, he did the same thing against Planned Parenthood. And, you know, who got indicted for that was the guy who shot the videos. So, Planned Parenthood was cleared on all of these investigations in all of these conservative states. So, real undercover journalism like 60 Minutes doesn't go into the investigation with an agenda. When you go into the investigation with an agenda like James O'Keefe, you end up leaving things on the cutting room floor that might shade things in a different light, and he repeatedly does that. But to Trump's point in the debate, it was an inartful attempt at deflecting. And it was something – he speaks in this code language. It's a broken English. It's kind of like right-wing pigeon, right? He speaks in broken English that is really just – sentence fragments of right-wing conspiracies and misinformation that only a certain segment of the populace can understand what he's talking about. That's right. A perfect example. That video, the only people who are going to know about that video are the people that read Breitbart, because who reported the video? Breitbart. And who runs Trump's campaign? Breitbart.
Yep.
So it's quintessential Trump. He mentions these things and expects people to know what he's talking about, when in fact the only people that know what he's talking about are the people who have drunk the Kool-Aid and
exactly.
are following these media accounts.
Oh my God, I'm glad you have background on that, because it just – but it, all of it makes total sense, because it's like it has to be a Breitbartian thing. So the other thing that he mentioned, and I think I saw a link that this was a Pew study, that there are millions of people who were registered to vote that shouldn't be. And I did check this before we started talking, and what it is there was a Pew study that actually said there are millions – actually I think it said 24 – of inaccurate – or potentially invalid registrations. But that could mean I move from one house to another. My voter registration is now inaccurate because I have moved and not updated it. But it is still – I'm still a registered voter. I'm still allowed to vote. So it was very cherry-picking numbers. And
well, I mean, it's actually a question of whether there's fraud or there's not. And,
right.
And every reputable investigation – passing
it as fraud when it's not. Exactly.
Right. Right. You know, there are probably lots of people in the voter rolls who – are no longer voting. You know,
that include people. Yeah, does that include people that like I'm dead, but I just didn't tell you?
So they update the rolls a variety of different ways. One of the ways that they do it is through death records. One of the ways that they do it is through filings of change of address forms.
Okay.
They do it a variety of different ways. One of the things that the right wing has taken to doing is this thing called cross check. And what they do is they match voter rolls in one state with voter rolls in another state. And anybody that matches, they challenge the registrations of, which then requires that person who's been challenged to prove that they should be registered to vote where they are. A lot of these people don't end up doing that because they missed the letter. They're not expecting it, whatever. What they don't tell you is that the match rate is so artificially inflated. So if a Brian Pittard was found in Florida and – what's your middle initial, Brian?
James is my first name.
So. All right. So if it was James Pittard was found in Florida with a middle initial B, and a James Pittard was found in Texas with a middle initial R, they would count that as a match. They don't take the extra step of matching middle initials. They don't take the extra step of necessarily matching birthdays or social security numbers or driver's license numbers. They don't do any of the things that would result in a better match rate, because the goal is not to remove only people from the rolls who shouldn't be on the rolls anymore, who are duplicates. The goal is to remove people who are not going to vote for Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
They know that by doing this, it is far less likely that somebody, a person of color, a senior citizen, somebody who's disabled, somebody who's low income and therefore more likely to vote for a Democrat, it's far less likely that they will respond to that letter and that they will get registered to vote again than it is if some Republican is bumped off the rolls.
Which is a sad commentary. But again, like you said, it touches demographics that just either can't or won't bother because of life circumstances to change things and, you know, fix it. So it's maddening, because again, I keep hearing over and over again and reading other studies that voter fraud is anecdotal, and there have been historical cases, and unfortunately
some like major like 25, cities 25-30 out of billions.
Exactly. So it's such a small problem, and yet there's so much effort to it. This segment is also where what many immediate reactions seem to be most stunned by, and this is kind of echoing Trump's rigged claims.
This is the story of the week.
Yep.
Yeah, he basically would not, after Chris Wallace point blank asked, will you accept a peaceful transition or the election results if you lose?
And his answer was stay tuned.
Stay tuned. I love it. Of course he says stay tuned, because he's Donald Trump at its core thinks he's an entertainer.
Well, we've got the – you know, and I think that – issue. You know, debates are going to be digested very differently than how they have been in the past, right? So a lot of people would say that Tim Kaine probably lost the debate based on the performance. Mm-hmm. You know, the polls showed that it was like 42-47 in one of them. It was evenly split in another one. But what was the story coming out of that debate that was talked about on every major media channel and in every paper for the following week? It was about how Pence wouldn't defend Donald Trump and how he denied reality when he said that Donald Trump hadn't said X, Y, and Z when in fact he had, and there was videos to prove it. That's what they talked about for a week. They didn't talk about who won, who lost, who made the points, who didn't. They talked about Pence's reliability as a running mate and the fact that he couldn't defend Donald Trump. So what we're finding is that these little micro issues from the debates end up driving the coverage and kind of make the debates secondary in the story. The story coming out of this debate is that Donald Trump, in the truest sense of being a strong man, you know, somebody who's prone to fascistic dictatorial tirades, will not accede to the peaceful transition of power in this country, which is the first time that a presidential candidate in modern history has ever said such a thing. And it's no wonder CNN has their, you know, there's only really two polls that come out after a debate saying who won or who lost, you know, of people that watched the debate, scientifically taken poll, not one of those, you know, DrudgeReport.com, polls, you know. I call them click and repeats. You know, this is scientific. And CNN's ORC poll of viewers of the debate tonight say that 52% say Hillary Clinton won, 39% say Donald Trump won. So, again, I think that that bodes well for her. And I think the story that we're going to be talking about for the next, you know, through the weekend, at the very least, is that Donald Trump is being a crazy person who won't do what every other person in our democracy has done for generations, which is accept the peaceful transition of power, something that distinguishes us as a democracy and a shining example of you know, freedom and liberty.
And what kills me is this is very akin to the birtherism movement and the thing that he did with that, which totally undermines any respect and support for the person who holds the office. And admittedly, I didn't have a whole lot of support or respect for George W. Bush, but at the same time, I was critical of his policy choices, but I wasn't saying that he was an idiot. Well, maybe I might have said that occasionally. I don't want to say anything that's not probably true. But you know, like I was—
You're not running for president.
Well, I'm not running for president, that's true. But also, like, just it's remarkable the amount of disrespect that President Obama has received in the last 8 years for issues that are not factually based.
I'm sorry. I mean, there is no comparison to how Obama's been, you know, treated.
Yeah.
President Bush, yes, liberals said lots of bad things about him, but think about his best moment as a president was in the way that the country responded after 9/11 when we all literally came together as one, right? We all did. Mm-hmm. Democrats allowed things to happen in Congress that a Democrat typically wouldn't let happen.
Right.
Right. And that was an example of Democrats taking one for the greater good, right? If this were to happen on Obama's watch, the first thing we would have is people, Republican Congress people, tweeting about how this was Obama's fault and debating on who was going to get aid. Okay, that's what would happen if something like that happened on Obama's watch. They don't believe in a government that works, so they don't want the government to work.
Yes, absolutely. That's the obstructionist movement of the Republican Party in general right now, with the stonewalling the hearings for the Supreme Court nominee Merrick Garland and not being willing to do many other appointments hearings throughout Obama's administration, much less the fact that any legislative action is just stymied and budgets aren't being passed like normally we have done for all of the history since we've had a national budget. Like, all of that is obstructionist. And that I've had Republicans tell me to my face, that's, we don't believe in big government. So yes, I am happy when my leaders obstruct.
Yeah, I just wanted to tie it back to the Republican Party and just to show what a piss poor candidate Trump is for his party. With this statement about stay tuned, I think he has handed Republicans that are on the fence yet another out. I don't know how many will be brave enough to take it, but I think the only tweets we have seen are unsurprising names so far, like Jeff Flake and Lindsey Graham. But he's handed them another out for them,
And I think fewer will take it this time because so many had a backlash within their own party, their base, when they did it after the video.
Especially if they're running right now.
Right. Yeah. So I would say that Donald Trump is the perfect candidate for the Republican Party because he is their base. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hillary Clinton has three times debated and defeated the personification of a YouTube comment thread.
I love that. It is so sad. Okay, so only a couple more things, then we got to wrap up.
I just wanted to bring up, since we went into fitness, I was surprised that we didn't get into the physical fitness of the candidates at all. maybe that's been covered enough, but if I was a Martian and I was seeing these people for the first time, Hillary was radiant. And Trump, I thought,
was gray,
really tired and washed out.
Did not smile much at all.
He didn't look orange either. It was really weird.
Well, I think they tamped that down. I was talking about this with someone. I think either he gets flustered and that red just bleeds through, but you'd think that might make him more orange. But I think the makeup job they're doing is really trying to – I don't know, because he doesn't look as orange as he normally does. So,
yeah, usually you get to see the whites of his eyes, and you're not talking about his eyeball. You're talking about the area around his eye that's not covered in orange.
Those raccoon marks. Yeah. Now, what about the sniffing? Because I did notice he did tend to sniff, not as much maybe in the past. I mean, of course, the whole joke about him being using cocaine or doing whatever. And is it just he can't breathe? Like he's having a hard time gulping before he spews ridiculousness? Like I don't get the sniffing.
Maybe the blow isn't as good in Vegas.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe the blow isn't as good in Vegas.
Yeah. I think Donald Trump is finally discovering that his shit does stink.
Also, the only other thing that's really odd and effective, like he always like manipulates the mic. Like, he never trusts that the mic is in the right place. He's always moving it around, adjusting it, doing this and that. And you look over and Hillary is just like grinning and smiling and beaming. And like, all of that has to go against these stupid health claims that the Breitbart people tend to make.
But I also think that could backfire with her, because there were some moments where she was smiling and it was a fairly heavy topic. And I know she was responding to his inane answers. But I do not envy
her position.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't smile enough. So she smiles a lot during one debate. And the pundits are like, why is she smiling so much?
Oh,
like,
I know. Right.
You know, the only critique she had coming out of the first debate was that she was too prepared. So it's like she just can't win.
But can't win for trying. I know. Right.
I would say that, one of the things that stood out to me was, so the microphone thing, after the first debate, when he said he won, but tried to explain, I guess, why he lost, but he actually won, was because the microphone was rigged.
Uh-huh.
And, one of the best moments of the debate and one of the funniest moments of the debate was when Hillary Clinton, and I think this will get paired with his not wanting to concede the election in the video that we see for the coming days. When Hillary Clinton said, you said it was rigged when you lost the Iowa caucuses, and you said it was rigged when this happened and that happened. You said it was rigged when – you even said it was rigged when you lost the Emmy for The Apprentice. I think that was a great moment in the debate that pairs really well with his inability to accept the results of an election.
And he couldn't resist. He's like, well, I should have won the Emmy. And it's like, oh, my God, dude, what are you doing? Seriously. I love it. All right, so foreign hotspots. Real quick, the thing that stuck out to me, besides him again doing his Lex Luthor wrong, all that crap, he did – oh, this is where he actually talked about Podesta and Bernie and how he agreed with them, which I thought was interesting. And I think something Clinton had said, someone said something, and Chris Wallace actually took a moment, and you could hear him sort of laugh off mic. And I think it was in response to that, which was kind of remarkable, because most of the time he was pretty cool and collected.
I think it was when he was asking the question, and Trump said, exactly. And he goes, well, thank you.
Exactly. like literally, what the fuck, dude? Stop. The claim that the leaders of ISIS aren't in Mosul right now. This morning, I was listening to Diane Rehm, and like they were talking about the fight of Mosul and all this stuff, and how al-Baghdadi is confirmed, at least according to intelligence that they've released, yada yada, to be in Mosul to rally the troops. And he's sitting there saying how, we didn't get, what's with the, this was the whole, McCarthy spinning in the grave. We don't have, what happened to the element of surprise? And it's like, claiming that you know, we've said we're going to be taking Mosul has driven all the ISIS leadership out. And it's like, but they just said, like, this is recently confirmed that there is still ISIS leadership there. They're not just going to leave. They're actually trying to hold the city. So what – it's just – I don't know where he gets his intelligence from, and I did read this week he basically has been rejecting these intelligence briefings, or if he's been rejecting them, he's been just disregarding them very frequently. And it's like, how do you get off being this person who wants to lead the country when you cannot trust people – to give you facts and information that's their professional responsibility.
Well, the media has a liberal bias. Well, so obviously they're doing it just to screw with his talking point and to help Hillary.
Well, and the Mosul attack is just to help Hillary. It's a wag the dog moment. And I'm sitting there like, for real? Like, seriously? Like,
and this is part of me as a history nut that just drives me crazy when he brings stuff up like Patton. Patton is known for one of the greatest bait and switches in military history. Mm-hmm. And this is where you invoke him?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like, they don't announce every drone strike right before it happens. Like, does he understand that there is absolutely an element of secrecy? Right. But for something like a major offensive on a city –
or an element of strategy to get civilians
in their head.
To safer ground. I mean, there's so much that goes into the decisions about what you announce militarily. And does not have a grasp on that one.
But he knows more than the generals. That's the important thing. Yeah. So, at the end of the day, Chris Wallace had to do that middle school, high school elections, you know, kind of like last debate. Oh, say something nice about your opponent. He gave them a chance to do a closing speech, although I was a little confused. The sponsoring committee said no closing speeches, but the campaigns prepared them anyway. And then Chris Wallace went ahead and did it. Like, that whole thing made no sense to me. And I was
I think Hillary was just prepared for a closing statement. I'm not sure if they, that they were prepared anyways, because these things are decided well in advance. Right. You know, they work out the terms of the debates and the locations and everything else well in advance. So, if Hillary was running against anybody else, they would have had a fairly good and cogent 1-minute speech that they could have given off the top of their head too. But she's running against a crazy person, so of course he couldn't. I'm not shocked that Hillary had something that was fairly concise and, you know, worthy of being called a closing statement, because she's been giving these talking points, these speeches around the country for a year and a half. Donald Trump should have been much better.
And I think, since we are talking about the ending of the debate, apart from Trump's stay tuned being one of the biggest takeaways, I think the other one will be the into the microphone, such a nasty woman.
Oh, absolutely.
That's going to be one of the huge –
talk about winning women over, huh?
Yeah, and also
– he has the most respect for women. He is tremendous.
I mean, are you so surrounded by yes men that they can't tell you don't employ that again? Yeah, I guess you
– this is what happens when you've had 3 campaign managers in 1 election. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Yeah. It's not because he's been getting necessarily bad advice so much as it is that he's not willing to take other people's learned advice.
Right. And it also struck me that statement came at such an innocuous moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost as if he had to check that out.
She made a joke which was clearly funny, mm-hmm. and he said, such a nasty woman, mm-hmm. which was crazy because he had said things far worse than her than she had just said throughout the debate.
Yeah, it's amazing the rhetoric and the nonsense that he gets away with. The most disrespect I've ever seen, saying that our president, even if you don't agree with him, is like, you know, these other foreign leaders like Assad and Putin are just so much, you know, more intelligent and, you know, outsmarting. Iran is, they're just – it's like how – like, even if you disagree, that you have to phrase it in such – with such disrespect. Like,
yes. Think about it. In the primaries, this is a guy who talked incessantly about having gone to Wharton Business School. He didn't, by the way, mm-hmm. but he talked a lot about it. And he also said that he was a very smart person because his uncle was a professor at MIT. Somebody is so insecure about their own intelligence that they would make those two claims to beef themselves up. I am not in the slightest bit surprised that he thinks he's smarter than the generals on the ground, that he's smarter than the entire foreign policy apparatus of our country, and that he's smarter than anybody who's ever struck a deal in Washington.
Well, I am fairly confident that tomorrow, like you said, the headlines will definitely be about him not accepting the election results, and that some of the remarks, I'm sure. I'm actually less thrilled about maybe SNL's, you know, third debate performance, because honestly, with this, there were fewer great moments to play off of, at least I felt, but I'm sure they're going to come up with something fun. But, you know, other than at the very end, you know, no handshake again.
Yeah.
Or no handshake at the beginning, no handshake at the end. But there was a brief moment I caught, like, Trump sort of menacingly glaring behind Hillary, shaking hands with people, which was, mm-hmm. of course, very,
and
you know.
That saddened me to such a degree, because I'm just thinking where we were 4 years ago at that mm-hmm. final debate with Obama going up to Romney's grandkids and Ann Romney talking to Sasha Obama. And we just right. – it just feels like we are worlds away from that country right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, one of the big concerns about some of the calls for the rigged – or bet at the rigged election and some of the not accepting the results is – what will this do now for his supporters if and when Clinton does win and, you know, the results are ratified and all that? What level of civil discontent, and hopefully no more than that, but, you know, what are we going to see and what are we going to deal with for 4 years at least from these supporters who just don't believe she's the valid leader of the country? Like, it's set a tremendous step backwards in the already awful state of our politics to call into question basic institutions that we have to rely on for our country to be productive, to keep going.
Well, given the fact that they've, you know, tried to stop the president from doing anything, I thank God every day that Hillary Clinton knows her way around the government bureaucracy, because that's where a lot of her accomplishments are going to come from.
Yeah. No, I think that I've even back during the primaries, one of the reasons I was not as big of a pro-Bernie fan is exactly that. I said, you don't get it. I love Obama. I campaigned for Obama. He was great. But I understand now that Hillary absolutely knows how to make deals and get shit done. She has demonstrated that. And so even though as much as I think Obama's done a great job in the 8 years that he's been in office, I see the potential for her to do even better and go even further because she can make those deals and actually work the system to get stuff done. I mean, she's, again, been doing it for 30 years, even if, you know, Donald Trump thinks that, you know, she hasn't been successful or productive. I think the facts are certainly against that. So anything final about the debate you guys want to bring up before we end this? We're all basically thinking she won, an anecdotal small poll that it is. And admittedly, we're all kind of in the tank, so, you know.
Right. Well, you know, I have no problem criticizing a Democrat when they deserve it. So, you know, I think what we need to watch in the week ahead, because mm-hmm. really we're now talking about the week ahead and not the weeks ahead, because we're only a couple weeks before the election. But in sure. the week ahead, we should be looking at the state polls, not just the battleground state polls. But if the polls that we're seeing out of places like Utah and Georgia and Arizona and Texas – continue in that trend, if we get other polls showing that Hillary is either within a point or two of Donald Trump or leading him by a point or two, I think we could be looking at a very huge loss for the Republican Party generally from the top to the bottom of the ticket. You know, it says a lot that right now, on the night of the last presidential debate, Hillary Clinton is further ahead is closer to winning Arizona than Donald wow. Trump is to winning Pennsylvania.
That's remarkable. Like, in terms of bellwethers, those are two great, you know, right-leaning and left-leaning states, and that the margins are so close in the right-leaning states is just tremendous. And I hate using that word, but it's been beaten into me all night.
I do hope we have a four-year moratorium on that word.
Oh my God, really, seriously, we need to retire tremendous, big league, huge, all that stuff.
And believe me, bigly.
And believe me, that's
believe
the one.
Believe me,
because I don't.
Yeah, I know, right? Because yeah. whenever anyone says "believe me," you know they're
bullshit. I'm going to miss certain things, though, you guys. Like when he said, "Like I have all the best words." I mean, who said that's the yeah. best thing that's ever been said?
But
by
the
our
good
president.
Thing is, all of this will live on in infamy, and I think that I hope and pray nightly that in the end, 10 years from now, we will all look back on this time and go, "Oh my God, can you believe these idiots actually thought that Trump would have been a good president?" And clearly, the success of the Clinton administration that came after and the world, hopefully, as a whole, like, really proved that, no, this was – we avoided a huge mistake and all will be well. That's my dream. I keep hope alive. But thank you guys so much for being on the show. I've been talking about doing this for a while. I appreciate the wise and learned insight from both of you guys. I'm very excited to see how the next 2 or 3 weeks unfold. If God help us, anything bizarre and crazy and monumental shows up in the next couple of weeks, maybe we'll do a quick little reaction. But there are some great podcasts out there. Of course, Bill, some of your podcasts, if you want to mention those real quick.
Well, sure thing. And again, thank you, Brian, for giving me the opportunity to talk about something other than comic books or punk rock. but yeah, I have the Comic Book Bears podcast, which Brian is also a co-host of. And there is a pop culture podcast I'm a part of called the Tito and Bill Goodtime Hour. And very recently I started the UK PNW at 40 podcast, which is my first solo podcast, which is really hard work. And that's covering punk rock out of the United Kingdom on the 40th anniversary of the advent of that particular musical force. So
awesome.
That's where you can find me.
Carl, you are frequent on a couple of podcasts and radio shows, at least that I know of.
My most regular thing, you know, Sirius XM or a progressive radio station near you. I'm on the Stephanie Miller Show every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And then I do a variety of different shows that are not necessarily scheduled more than a couple days in advance. But folks can follow me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all the other, you know, social networks to find out what I'm up to at yep. Carl Frisch for all of them.
Carl with a K and Frisch with a C in there.
With an SCH, right?
SCH. So again, thank you guys so much. If you guys like what you're listening to, Flame On, we are a patron-driven enterprise. Our parent company, Nerdy Show, would not be able to put out this kind of content at all without patron support. NerdyShow.com/Patreon. You guys can set up and subscribe and give us little tips, especially if you like what Flame On does. You guys can always earmark a little bit towards us, and we really appreciate that. Also, Flame On Show, Flame On Podcast, all over your social media outlets. Again, we don't do this podcast, or we don't do usually the politics. And my words are starting to drain out of me as the night grows long. But we were really happy. I'm really thrilled to get two of my friends to get on and do this together. And thank you guys so much for being here. And thank you guys for listening. And that's it. Flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud, or give us your feedback at nerdyshow.com/survey. Flame On was produced by Pat O'Rourke, edited by Pat O'Rourke, and special thanks to Pat O'Rourke, not Brian, who likes to take the credit for doing what I see as nothing. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com and be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Flame on all your favorite social networks like Twitter, Recon, Scruff, Grindr, Twitter. Did I say Twitter? Did I hit all the major ones? Jacked, like Hornet if you're in like Southeast Asia. I think that's it. I think I've hit the – maybe one day they'll give me like free membership. I ain't paying for premium. That's a joke. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.